Welcome back to the Growth in Jams podcast. My name is Saul and I'll be your host here again today. Today I'm sitting down with a fiercely independent and successful woman, my sister Victoria Garcia. She is a doctor of physical therapy, a certified personal trainer, a TCU alumna, and a TWU DPT alumna. We discuss the role fitness has played in her life, mental health, things she has learned as a result of her education, starting her career, what she learned after living in South Africa and working as a physical therapist for the national rugby team, and relationship advice. I hope you enjoy the show today. Listeners, Victoria is my eldest sister. I'm very excited to have her here today. She's an incredible woman and I look up to her a lot in a variety of ways. To get the ball rolling, why don't you start by telling the audience a little bit about who you are, and that can just be your credentials, what you like to do for fun, and what you're currently doing with your time.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. I am Sol's eldest sister, but don't get it twisted. I'm not that much older, only 26. I am a doctor of physical therapy. That's my primary title. I'm also a certified personal trainer. I also have my certified strength and conditioning certificate. So I do a lot of that in my spare time. And I also work a lot in mental health.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's a great place to start with the physical fitness and health. Why don't you talk a little bit about when that started for you, when that love for fitness was sparked, and I guess some of the things you've learned about yourself along the way.
So I hated fitness in high school. I was that kid that like pretended they had the flu when you had to do the mile time trial in high school, or pretended like I broke my elbow when we had to do the pull-ups because I absolutely hated fitness. And then I think my junior year of high school, my PE coach was like, hey, I know you hate fitness, but you're really good at running when you want to. Like, you should try to join our running team, or essentially the cross-country team at the high school I was at. Mm-hmm. And I was like adamantly saying, no. Ended up deciding I was going to do it. And I tried it and I really liked it. And I was really good for someone who never ran, other than to like run away from, I don't know, a boy in high school, but never actually ran, and really ended up liking it. And so that was maybe in, let's say, June. By October, I ran my first full marathon. And so I ran my first full marathon as a junior in high school, which I would not recommend. It's probably not the best idea for your body. You're still growing. Your heart is not ready for something like that. But I went for it, loved it, ended up running a really good time. I think I ran like a 4:45. So really good for someone who's only 16, 17. And then from there, I kind of just continued to love it. My relationship with fitness, I think, has gone up and down. By that meaning, sometimes I think of it obsessively, like it controls me. And then sometimes I feel like it's just a part of who I am, which is a good time, like I do right now. So I identify myself as a runner, who also I do a lot of strength training, but a runner is what I think I'm best at. But I don't let that control me as a person. And then since then, I've gone on to run a lot of marathons. I think I'm at 8 fulls and like 13 halves. I PR'd in my half and a 90-minute half marathon in November of 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago. So that was really awesome. And then I PR'd in my marathon with a 3:17. Back in Houston in 2019. And that was my third Boston qualifier. So that was pretty cool. Got to run Boston. And then right now, my current goal is to go sub-3, which is very intimidating to think about. It's, I think, a 6:50 minute mile for 26 miles, and then go on to maybe run in the Olympic trials in the next 4 years. So been pretty crazy since high school. Yeah.
That is crazy, especially looking back, that you did not ever want to run and you just one day picked it up. And now, to be thinking about the Olympics and striving for that is crazy awesome, but also just shows like how much your body can endure and how much it can achieve when you push it to do so.
Yeah, which is essentially what fitness has taught me. I don't know if you're going to get into that later, but it's kind of like it's running specifically, but any type of fitness can really teach you this lesson. It's that our mind is the most powerful thing in our bodies. And I see that a lot when I'm running, because I can be running a marathon. I'm at mile 22. Everything hurts. I want to die. But it's your mind that's telling you that. It's your mind telling you to quit. And every marathon I've run except one, I never stopped. So I went all 26 miles without stopping once. And that's just because your mind is trying to trick you into saying that you can't do something that you can. And running has taught me to be very mentally strong more than anything. So even in life and things that aren't revolving around running, it's taught me that if I want to quit, I'm not going to, because I still have a lot left in the tank before I need to give up.
Yeah, that's so awesome that you're able to take that away from something like fitness, where I think a lot of people do it as a leisure thing or as maybe a way to look good. But I think for you, it's something that's much more than that. And yes. You talked a little bit about mental health. So maybe talk about how that ties into your mental health.
Yeah. So like I said, my relationship with fitness has been a little up and down. So the most of the time, I'd say like 80% of the time, running, lifting weights has absolutely helped my mental health. I have very bad anxiety. And I used to be treated for it with medications. And I'm all for medications if that's what you need. But for me personally, I just wanted to try a more natural route and see if that helped. And then if it didn't, I told myself I'd go back on medications. And so that's kind of when fitness was really happening for me and starting to run and lift weights and stuff. And for about the last 8 years, it's been the biggest stress reliever. It's made my anxiety very, very manageable. And so that's what I love. Like you said, I love about fitness is that I don't do it so that I can have this amazing beach body or so that I can impress people on Instagram. I do it because it makes me feel powerful and it makes me feel strong. And that's what I kind of love about it. Now, the flip side of that is that just like any girl who is in her teens or 20s who may listen to this, fitness can also be a downside and hurt your mental health if you let it. And by that, I mean, you can become too obsessed with the image of how you look. And you're only working out because you want to have that beach body or because you want to look like that girl on Instagram. And that's to say that I think almost every girl in this world is going to feel like that at least once. You just have to remind yourself what your core values are. You have to let yourself ride that wave of getting sucked in it for a little bit. Don't get mad at yourself. And then when you're ready, you pick yourself right back up. I know I got sucked into that recently. I was like, man, my pants are a little tight. I should be working out harder. I should eat less. And then you have to tell yourself, no, you don't. You don't have to do that. And fitness isn't supposed to be something for a punishment. It's supposed to be something that rewards your body and helps your body and not breaks it down even further.
That's really well said. And thank you for sharing a little bit about what you experienced mental health wise and the role that fitness has played for you. That's all invaluable information for people and very helpful, because especially the note that you just hit on, most girls aren't being told that. And if they are, they're not really internalizing it, I don't think. Become a society that has really influenced just young people to hyper compare themselves as a result of social media. So thank you for touching on that, for talking about that. I think this would be the perfect segue to talk about how your relationship with fitness transitioned and ultimately led to what you decided to pursue education-wise.
So I don't know if my love for fitness made me go become a physical therapist. I think it was more so my love for people. You know this, and everyone that knows me well knows this. I never wanted to be a physical therapist. I wanted to be a doctor, a medical doctor. And that was my goal all through high school, through most of college. Like I said, I was a runner all through high school, all through college, and then post-college. In my sophomore year of college, I had a very, very bad leg injury, tore my ACL, tore my meniscus, had a part of my IT band removed. It was a crazy surgery, took me out of my sport for like a year. And when I went through that whole process, I got to meet an orthopedic surgeon, I got to meet a general medicine doctor, and I got to meet a physical therapist. And through the three of those doctors, because they're all considered doctors, just of different types, the only one that really knew me and cared about me, what I felt like cared about me, was my physical therapist. And so that's kind of when I decided that instead of becoming a medical doctor who only got to see their patients, you know, once or twice, and then they were done with them, I wanted to be a physical therapist who got to see their patients over the span of anywhere from 3 months to a year and got to really know them and build a relationship with them. So that's kind of where, how I decided to do it. That's not to say that all doctors don't care about you. They usually do. It's just, I think my experience in particular was just, they were kind of like walking the door. Hello, what's your problem? All right, sign this paper, you're out. So got to experience that and decided I was going to be a physical therapist. Physical therapy requires a doctorate degree. So you have to do 4 years of undergrad, 3 years of grad. And then now they recommend 1 year of residency, which I haven't gone through yet, but may go through it in the next few years. So it's been a long journey, but finally got me here. Graduated in May of last year, and I'm doing pediatric physical therapy right now, which wasn't really what I wanted to do. I kind of wanted to do sports to get back into kind of the fitness side of things. But, you know, life throws you different curveballs, and now I'm doing pediatrics.
That's super awesome. I'm glad you brought that up because I think it's great that you're doing that. But I would like for you to share a little bit about what your day-to-day looks like doing that.
Yeah, my day-to-day is definitely different than I think your average PTs. I do home health. So I treat patients in their home, usually meaning they're very, very ill. These aren't your ACLs. These aren't your shoulder rotator cuffs. And these are all people who are under 18. The majority of my patients are under 5, who have had traumatic brain injuries, who have been born without limbs, who have gone through something very traumatic, like they've been dropped and now they're brain dead, something like that. That's very, very sad cases. And then a few of them are orthopedic cases. So babies who are born, what I guess you would call pigeon-toed, having to fix that. So I work a really cool schedule with home health. You get to essentially create your own schedule. So I don't have to do 8 to 5. I will wake up, let's say on a Monday. I teach fitness 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. So it's very early on Mondays. And then I'm still training to run. So from like 7 to 9, I run and lift weights. And then from like 10 to 5, I treat patients. I go into their homes. I work in one of the most dangerous, impoverished parts of Texas. So it's very interesting, sometimes a little scary, but very rewarding because the kids I'm seeing don't have anything. I have one kid, he has spina bifida, so he can't use his legs. He is one of 11 kids and they live in a one bedroom home with no air conditioning and no floor. So their floor is just dirt. Most of my kids are in situations similar to that. And I had another kid whose older brother, he was 17 and he was shot dead last week in front of the house. And so this crazy stuff. And a lot of people tell me, well, Victoria, why would you go back? Like, why would you continue to do this? And I think it's because the rewarding feeling I feel helping these kids and becoming a friend to these kids and these parents is so much greater than if I was doing it, let's say, in an outpatient setting. So I spend about an hour with each kid, drive to the next house, same thing all over again. So it's a very interesting, sometimes very difficult job. But I think for right now, my phase of life right now, it's the best thing I could be doing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, something like that has to be extremely emotionally taxing. How do you manage that for yourself without being overwhelmed?
So, you know, dad always jokes and everyone in the family jokes that sometimes I can be very good at disassociating feelings, which isn't always a good thing. But I think for this job, it's a really good thing. Not to say that I don't care. I absolutely care about what goes on in these children's lives, but you have to learn to not take it home. My first 3 months, you know, I would call my mom, I would call dad, I would be crying. It was so hard, but that's not going to help the kid. You know, you can't be breaking yourself down. And then when you show up to the kid's house, not be able to work with them. So for me, it's just about remembering that this is my job. I do the most I can for them. It's a lot of working with CPS, which a lot of people think, oh, CPS means they're going to pull the kids out of the home. That's not the case. I'll call CPS on families that maybe don't have water, don't have food. And CPS goes in and helps them a lot of the time. Social workers will come in and help them. So I do a lot of that to try to make sure that their situation is as good as it can be for what they have.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think the work that you're doing is incredible, especially because Yeah, knowing you, that's not what you had envisioned at all going into this.
No.
Yeah, for the listeners, I started laughing at the beginning of this question, which, you know, in hindsight, you're probably like, wow, why is he laughing? But I think you should share some of the activities that you do with these kids that maybe would cause someone to laugh about it.
So this activity that he's talking about isn't with my kids who are super, super sick. This is with my kids who, like I said, are pigeon-toed, maybe are two or three and are not walking yet. But one activity that I do with a lot of my, well, I do with all my kids is that you have to teach a kid before they learn how to walk to learn how to fall, and that falling is okay. And just different ways that you can fall so that you're not hurting yourself. So one of the first activities I do with the kids I work with is push them. I push them off sofas. I push them, you know, off chairs. I push them on the ground. I push them backwards and forwards. And it's just teaching them how to land properly, how to get up, you know, properly. But it's really funny. My family is always sending me like pictures or videos of people who are hitting kids and like knocking them down. And yeah, that's essentially what I do, except I get paid for it.
Yes. So let the record stand that I am not a terrible person, and I'm laughing because she pushes little kids down and gets paid. But yes, thank you for sharing that. Something that I think we jumped a little bit that I think would be great to hit on, to backtrack a little bit. So your educational journey, why don't you talk a little bit about where you went to school originally, where you ended up finishing, and some of the things that I guess happened in that time period that were pivotal for you and some of the things you learned.
Yeah. So when I first graduated from high school, I decided to go to University of California, San Diego. So moved out of Texas, went to San Diego, was there for about 5 months, and realized that it just wasn't the time for me to be so far away from my family. So I knew I had always wanted to go to TCU. It was always in the back of my head, but didn't really apply because my dad really pushed for us to, like, you know, leave the state if we could, to experience new things. So I did. Didn't work out, ended up transferring to TCU, which is in Fort Worth. And I loved and hated TCU at the same time. I loved it because I got the best education. I went into PT school with a lot more knowledge than a lot of my classmates. I feel like I learned so much. I met amazing people. TCU gave you every accommodation you could need to become the best person. It was also difficult because the majority of people who go to TCU are extremely wealthy, like, you know, come into school with their own jets and helicopters type of wealthy. So it can be a little intimidating when you don't have your own private jet or when you aren't getting plastic surgery at 17. It was a lot to handle, but it taught me how to appreciate what you have and how to learn to love yourself while I was there. And then from there, I applied to PT school. I got into a few schools, but I ultimately chose Texas Woman's University here in Dallas. So moved from Fort Worth to Dallas, did 3 years there and loved it. If you're into PT school, if you're looking into going to PT school, the TWU program in Dallas and Houston are the number one in the state and in the top in the nation. So definitely look into it. It's also one of the cheapest schools you can go to here. So it worked out really well. And then I think the best part of my 7-8 years of being in school is that my last 3 months of school, I took a ginormous leap that not many people had taken at my PT school. And I said, I want to do my final clinical rotation, which is your most important rotation in PT school. I want to do it outside of the country, and not only outside of the country, but I want to do it in South Africa, Cape Town, South Africa. And I thought this idea was ridiculous. I thought my parents were going to say no. I thought the school was going to say no. Everyone said yes. Everyone pushed me and said, you should absolutely do this. So within a very short time span, I think my idea formed like in June, and I had to move out by end of December, beginning of January. I had all the paperwork completed. I got my work visa. I got a house, everything I needed, a job in Cape Town, and packed my bags and moved. And living in Cape Town is by far the greatest experience of my life. If anyone has the ability, the chance to travel, or live outside of America, I would absolutely take it. The life in South Africa is extremely different. And we could have a whole podcast on the things I learned while living in South Africa. But I think the biggest takeaway wasn't even about physical therapy. I was working as a physical therapist there. My job was actually amazing. I was getting a team ready, the South African national team ready for the Olympics that were supposed to be happening last year. So I was with all the Olympic athletes. Their team had just won the World Cup a few months earlier. So it was the biggest team in the world. Got to work with them, got to travel with them. And that was fantastic. But all my lessons that I learned that really stick out to me have to do with life. And over there, when people say America has everything, we really do. Over there, these people are living the most beautiful, abundant lives. And they're living with maybe a fourth of what we have here in every aspect: their education, their food, their healthcare, their economy. Everything is not even close to what we have. And they're so much happier over there. And so I got to learn a lot about that. I learned a lot about their history. Segregation is still a thing over there in a lot of places. So that was very interesting for me to learn. They categorize people kind of by color. So we have the whites and the blacks, and that's normal over there. Like, you know, calling someone a white or a black is just your common terms. And then when I came, I wasn't considered either. So when there was like the restaurants or the bars that were for whites or the restaurants or the bars are for blacks, I kind of didn't fit in either one because my skin color, not because of my name or where I'm from, my skin color is kind of a mix of both. So getting to experience what that was like was crazy. And like I said, I could talk about the race part and the segregation part and all those lessons I learned for hours, but it just really taught me what we have and what we take for granted. Everything we take for granted. Water. We didn't have drinking water like we do here. I had to work to find water and make sure that I had water when I needed it. Electricity. We had this thing called load shedding, which the closest way I can describe it is the electric failure that Texas had a few months back, where the state of Texas essentially forced us to lose our power for hours, days at a time. We had that in Cape Town, but for every single day, the government pulled our power and pulled our water for anywhere between 2 to 12 hours. And they wouldn't tell you, they wouldn't really warn you. So I learned to live without a shower. I learned to live without a refrigerator. I would call dad crying all the time because I'd buy all these groceries and then everything would be spoiled. I'd have nothing. You can't go to the grocery store because the grocery store also doesn't have food. And it was very hard for me. The showers, we didn't have running water. So I would come back from playing rugby for 6 hours and I'd be sweaty and there's nothing you can do about it. We don't have air conditioning. I was there at a very hot time. So I was sleeping essentially in a pool of my own sweat. And all this was normal for them. And no one complained over there except for me, the American, who was way too privileged. And so it just taught me a lot. Thinking about it, like, always just makes me want to cry because it was the most phenomenal experience of my life. Trying to go back with you guys in the next few months. And then my ultimate life goal is to be able to work over there at some point, not live there permanently, but to give back to the kids over there some way, somehow, and maybe visit there once a year and have some sort of nonprofit back in Cape Town.
That would be so awesome.
Yeah.
I hope one day that I get to experience that country because, yeah, the history there is historic on another capacity.
Yes.
But it's also one of the most beautiful landscapes, I think, in the world.
Yes, it is.
So yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I think a lot of the people I've been privileged to be friends with and know in my life have had the opportunity to go outside of the country. And all of us, because I have been as well, can advocate and say that it is one of the greatest things that you can do for yourself. And yeah, it really changes your perspective and your worldview. And yeah, appreciation is one of those major things, gratitude that comes out of leaving the little bubble that you have here in the US. And that goes for, honestly, anywhere. Even if you're, for example, in a major city, you could leave and go to Appalachia in the US and you will also get that perspective and see that there's real people in this world that are struggling.
Yeah.
And you have it a lot better than other people. But yeah, that's great. I'm not too sure where to segue from here. but I think we did a great job of covering a variety of things. Are there any things that come to your mind before we jump into, I think, something totally tangential?
No, you really hit it on the, if you travel, if you get the chance to travel, go for it. But to add to that, getting to travel out of the country, I think it's also important that if you do, you know, it's great to stay in the luxury resorts that are all around the world. But if you have the time, you know, make sure you really spend a day with the people of the country you go to. So no matter where that, it could be Mexico, you stay at one of the great resorts, but try to spend a day just seeing what the life is like in the city that you're in, because I don't really think you get the full experience of what the rest of the world is like if you just hop on a plane to another country and then go straight to a luxury resort that's paid for by a bunch of Americans. So
yeah,
that's my only suggestion for that one.
That is a, yeah, you hit the nail with the hammer or on the head or whatever the expression is, but that was a great job because for example, for me, I mean, Mexico gets a really bad connotation and it gets this really bad rap. It is dangerous, but a lot of areas in the world are dangerous, including certain places in the US. But we've been to Cabo where we did the whole resort thing and all that. But every time that I've gone with my dad, we haven't done that. We only go to see family down there and it is completely different. But you realize that it's so cool. Like, I actually really love Mexico and I think it's one of the coolest places. Like, Monterrey is one of the most pretty cities I've ever seen. And it gets a really bad rap. But yeah, just an anecdote that highlights that same sentiment. Let's jump into the tangentially related thing.
Yeah.
Which is you and Patrick. You guys are great. I love Patrick. He's like an older brother, and I think he will always be an older brother to me no matter what. But I think you do a great job of talking a little bit about some relationship advice. Maybe broadly what that journey has looked like for y'all, because y'all have been together longer than anyone I know that's in their 20s.
Yeah. So Patrick and I have been on a roller coaster of a relationship that's lasted 10 years this month, actually, which is crazy because I'm only 26 going on 27. So we met in high school and dated all through high school, all through college, all through me going through PT school and him going through medical school. He's graduating this week, actually, and becoming an orthopedic surgeon, which goes back to the first thing I said. I was like, orthopedic surgeons suck. They don't suck, which is the one I experienced. And so, yeah, we have been through everything together. And the crazy part of this relationship is that we've never lived in the same city for 10 years. All 10 years, we were distanced. And it's crazy because we're moving in together in 3 weeks for the first time in 10 years. It's like mind-blowing to me. And that's just like, you know, people talk to me about Patrick and I all the time and they're like, oh my God, you guys are crazy. Y'all are amazing. But just like if any relationship, there are very, very good days and there are very, very bad days. And sometimes it's good months and sometimes it's bad months. And I think my only piece of advice for anyone who just started a relationship or who's been in a relationship for a really long time is to always listen to your gut, always follow what your heart is saying. And I truly believe that if two people are supposed to be together, you're going to end up together. It's weird when you start dating someone who's, you know, you're when you're 16 and now you're going to be 26 and you're both, you know, doing your own life, making sure that you guys follow the same path. For Patrick and I, it worked out for the most part. But if you're someone who's in that situation and your gut's just telling you, you know, maybe I should go learn to be independent for a little while, or maybe I should, you know, learn what it's like to be alone, because I think it's very important whether you're in a relationship or not to know how to be alone. You should do it. And that's not to say that you don't love your boyfriend or your girlfriend or whatever, but I think the most important thing is you have to know who you are. You have to love yourself. You have to be confident in yourself before you can commit yourself to someone else. So whether you're, like I said, whether you're just starting a relationship or it's already a long-term relationship, always ask yourself, like, am I confident in who I am? Could I be alone right now? You know, do I love myself? And if all those answers are yes, then yeah, continue on. But if you aren't comfortable with any of those things, then I think that's when you should really say, hey, maybe I should figure out who I am first. And luckily for Patrick and I, it worked out because we were always long distance. And so I learned to be alone from the start, and that was never an issue. But I see a lot of my friends who have been in relationships and don't know what it's like to spend a week without their significant other. And I think that's adorable. And I think that's amazing. But I think you should know how to be your own person, especially if you're only in your 20s or your early 30s. Being your own person is so, so, so important because nothing's ever guaranteed. And so you always have to take care of yourself, I believe, before you take care of others. And so that was my biggest piece of advice. And like I said, it worked out for him and I because we learned to be alone through our relationship because of long distance. And we allowed ourselves to be our own people. We have totally different friends. We have totally different interests. He was in medical school, which took up like every single ounce of his time. And so we kind of just allowed ourselves to flourish as individuals. And then after that, we come together as a couple.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I mean, as your brother and someone that's been able to view y'all's relationship from an outside perspective, I think it's been really helpful to see that. Yeah, I've been really privileged to see that. But I'm also just really happy for the two of y'all and happy that you have the maturity and recognition to recognize those things that you just said. Thank you for that. And I think indirectly by diffusion, I've probably absorbed some of that by watching y'all and by witnessing y'all. So thank you for that and for the role that you played in doing so. Yeah, I think we've covered a lot of great things. I know we didn't get to talk a whole lot about mental health as well, but maybe you share a little bit about the advocacy that you do for that as well now too.
Yeah, I talk a lot about mental health on my Instagram and I've done a lot of podcasts on it. So if you want to hear that take, because my mental health journey has been very up and very down. And so follow me on Notoriously Tori and you can see all those podcasts. I think my biggest piece of advice for people that I say when I end every podcast I do is just that it's okay to not be okay sometimes. And I know this is cheesy and you see it on memes, but your path to excellence is not a straight line. And sometimes your drops are going to be quick and it's only going to last a week. Sometimes your drops are going to be significant and last a year or more. The last year for me, even though I graduated PT school, even though I got my first job, even though I've been doing all this other stuff, has been super, super hard and would definitely be considered one of those low, low drops. But to the outside, people are like, oh, she's succeeding. She's doing great. So like I said, path to excellence is not going to be a straight line. It's okay. Don't believe everything you see on social media. I've been trying to get off of it as much as possible because we only post what's best. People are only posting their 387th shot of them in a bikini because that's the only one where they thought they looked good. Or they're only posting, you know, on the days that they're happy and that things are going well for them. And that can really mess with your head and make you feel like you're not doing good enough. So, you know, live your own life. If you have to get off social media for a week or two, do it. Reset. Give yourself credit even in the worst of times because just waking up another day is something to be proud of and keep on pushing through.
Awesome. Very well said. But yeah, lastly, thank you for being here. Thank you for doing this and for your candor, being willing to share all that you've been through, touch on some vulnerable pieces of information. But yeah, I look up to you a lot. So thanks, sister, for doing this.
Of course.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Growth and Jams podcast. My name is Saul. We are hosted by 1718 Media. If you enjoyed the show today, please feel free to give it a rating in the podcast app. Also, follow us on social media at Growth and Jams. Thank you for tuning in.